Thank you, Caroline. And that's great to be back again. And it's great to see everybody in the chat from all over the world. So it's wonderful to be back with you and to share this session with you today. Some of you are dealing with chilly winter weather, and probably some of you have a little bit balmier time. It's kind of cold here in Nashville right now, but spring is around the corner. So I'm going to start with a guided meditation. And the guided meditation today is going to be a kind of spacious grounding meditation. And that kind of ties in with our theme today, grounding and then groundlessness and how do we work with that. So let's start with settling in with a guided meditation. So if you'd like to just begin to settle into your seat, into your space, wherever you are, whether you're in a chair or a cushion, and just begin to feel the body settling into your space, allowing the eyes to close gently, or just lowering your gaze if you're more comfortable with that. And now bring your attention to your breath. And just noticing the in and out movement of the space, of the breath itself. Really paying attention to the inhale, the stopping point, and the exhale. And noticing as you pay attention to the breath, those very moments when the breath pauses at the inhale and the exhale. So there's just a brief moment where one breath ends and another begins. And see if you can be aware of that brief pause before you inhale or exhale. And this is the space between the breaths. So if you can notice this tiny space, just beginning to notice how when you connect with the space, that the space is actually all around the body. And so bringing the attention now to the body itself, and noticing the places where the body is making contact with the chair or the cushion. And just being aware of the sensations of that contact, and perhaps a sense of groundedness of being supported. Noticing where the feet are making contact. And so noticing these sensations, but also noticing the places where the body is not making contact with a cushion or chair, and those places where there is space around the body. And seeing if you can notice both of the sensations of the places where the body is in contact and the places where there's spaciousness. And so you can be aware simultaneously of these two experiences. And even where there is the solidity of the ground under your feet, you may notice as you pay attention that even these sensations of noticing the ground and the chair, the sensations change. There's a kind of spaciousness, even in the feelings of touch and contact and ground. So it's not completely solid. And just allowing the ground and the chair to hold and support your body without your needing to do anything. Perhaps just really relaxing into your posture, into the presence of this moment. And now moving your attention to your hands. Really feeling into your hands and the sensations of your hands. Maybe noticing where they're resting, the position of your hands and what they're touching. And yet perhaps noticing that even though the hands are making contact, there's still a sense of lightness. There's still some spaciousness, even in the contact. And now opening your awareness, feeling your entire body sitting here in this moment, in the chair. And feeling the breath moving through the body. And feeling the sensation of the breath. If you're able to just allow the breath to contact all parts of your body and your being. And see if you can feel the spaciousness of that. And now notice as you allow the breathing moving through the body, if there is a place where the sensations are the most pleasant. So we're looking for some pleasant here. And even if you wouldn't categorize it as pleasant, perhaps there's a point where there's just some ease with the breath. See if you can notice where the body has this sense of lightness or ease. Just allowing the attention to rest at that point. And just letting the breath be natural. I'm just aware of the breath in the body. And letting this place of breath and space and awareness be a place of refuge, of home, a place to return to. When you wander, that gentle returning home. And if there are other sensations in the body, just welcoming those as well. Any feeling or emotion? Can the stability of the breath and body create space for whatever emotion may be arising for you? Now bringing attention to the heart and allowing awareness for a few minutes here to just rest at the heart. Whatever you may find in this vicinity of the body, this heart space, this realm of the heart. And if you find that the mind becomes active and the attention, the awareness starts to move away, just noticing that with loving kindness, with compassion, just aware of the movement of the mind. And then gently coming back. The thoughts don't have to be cut off or stopped, but anchoring your attention at the breath, the body, the heart, and allowing that to be your primary focus will allow the thoughts to lose some of their grip. And if you're able, just gently aware that there is more happening in this moment. We can begin if we feel to, and if you feel safe enough to do so. This isn't expected, but if you feel safe enough to do so, allow the idea of a separate inner and outer quality of this life and being to just drop for a moment and bring the awareness of the inner and outer as part of the same experience. And so the breath that we breathe, it comes into the body as we inhale. It moves back out. And yet this door is always open and moving from inside to outside, outside to inside. And so this connection is what gives us life. And opening to the sound. Perhaps, if possible, just feeling a connection with all of life at this point. And recognizing, as Thich Nhat Hanh always spoke so beautifully of, that this interconnectedness is the very essence of our lives. And we all rely on each other and this world to stay alive, to thrive. This deep connection that we all share, and we're sharing it together now as we meditate. And so let's finish this session just sitting in silence together. Well, hello, everybody. And for those who have arrived since we opened, just welcome to you also. And just great to see everybody here. Thank you for your comments in the chat, letting me know where everybody's from all over. So it's great to be able to come together like this, and great to be with you this afternoon for me, and probably morning for others and evening for others. But how beautiful that we can all be here together through this technology. So my talk is When Life Throws Curveballs, Exploring Groundlessness and Freedom. And, you know, obviously it's really speaking to this time that we're in terms of what we've been dealing with, you know, specifically with the pandemic for the past couple of years and all of the endless changes that we've been through and the times when it began to feel like everything was opening up, and then another wave of the virus has come, and then we start to feel relaxed, feeling better, and then another wave. And, you know, it's just this kind of endless sea that we're swimming in. And right now it's feeling like the virus is on the wane again, at least in a lot of places. And maybe there's a sense of optimism and hope and a little sense of lightness. And yet I think all of us, since we've been here before, are probably not putting all our eggs in that basket, you know, being a little bit careful about what comes next, not quite sure. And so there's a lot of not knowing. We're dealing with a great deal of not knowing. We're also dealing with climate change. And over this past year in particular, the intensity of it has increased. And I think we're so much more aware of it. You know, even though there's a question, not knowing what to do, and the political environment, you know, in the U.S. and also in many places in the world, feels so perilous. And so we're dealing with so many areas of life that can really lead to a sense of not knowing and a sense of groundlessness. And so how do we navigate this terrain? So that's a lot of what I'll talk about. And I wanted to start with a poem from Wendell Berry, which really speaks to this quality of not knowing that we have to deal with so often. It may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. And that when we no longer know which way to go, we have come to our real journey. And so it's a challenge. And yet it really, you know, if we can meet these challenges and we can use our practice, there can be a way to be a lot more deeply engaged and even finding some freedom in the midst of it all. And so, you know, human beings naturally seek grounded certainty. It's relative to survival issues. You know, we need a place to sleep. We need food, the basics of life. So it's instinctual to seek that kind of certainty. But the law of impermanence continuously upends this in at least certain ways for all of us. You know, this is part of the first noble truth of suffering and of dukkha. One description of dukkha is unreliability. And so while we seek that certainty of ground, yet life continuously offers us in various ways unreliability. And so with things shifting constantly and maybe on steroids with what we've dealt with over the last few years, it just feels perhaps even more intense, more challenging to navigate when there isn't the ground under our feet so often. And I think what happens, and one of the challenges, is there's a gap between what we wanted, what we planned, what we expected, and the reality. And in grasping for things to be a certain way, it just keeps slipping through our hands, right? And yet, you know, I think the important thing is not necessarily just to jump to sort of a philosophical understanding, well, it's all impermanent, you know, I should be okay with it. I think what's really important is in really seeing and acknowledging the challenge of this in a way that gives our heart space to be disappointed if we need to be disappointed, to grieve when we need to grieve, to acknowledge the disappointment, to acknowledge the feelings, and to see the mind and the heart, and to meet it with some compassion and some understanding. And then it can begin to open some space, with the more space to be with things as they are, the suchness of the situation. And so in Zen, which was my original where I started practicing to begin with. The suchness is just the reality of the way things are in this moment, beyond our desires or projections, but the suchness of a moment. Right now, it's like this. And there are elements of this suchness that we often don't have any control over. And yet sometimes in beginning to navigate this ground and a recognition of this shifting terrain and the challenges, and yet we can begin to relax the nervous system a little bit. And so what is groundlessness, maybe beyond intellectual understanding? You know, I think a lot of people might see it as a loss of context about how the world is, the constantly shifting sands. One person I talked to recently said they feel it's almost harder now than in the first year of COVID because it's like this endless shifting. It's almost exhausting after a while. You know, it takes a lot of energy to keep kind of moving and responding to these changing situations. And, you know, even if you believe in science, for instance, there are contradictory pieces of information, divided opinions. There's so many ways in which there can be that feeling of groundlessness. And yet the gap of not knowing this groundlessness can also be a place of freedom. And so there was an interesting story that I wanted to tell you from about Dogen. Some of you have probably heard of Dogen. He was one of the greatest Zen masters of all time, and he was a founder of the Soto School of Zen, and he has many quotes. But this is a story where before he had become enlightened, and it's where he found and came to a place of not knowing. And I just want to read this as just a short little anecdote. Master Jizo asked Dogen, "Where have you come from?" I pilgrimage aimlessly," replied Dogen. "What is the matter of your pilgrimage?" asked Jizo. "I don't know," replied Dogen. "Not knowing is most intimate," remarked Jizo. At that, Dogen experienced great enlightenment. So, not knowing is most intimate. And so this place of not knowing is the place in which we can acknowledge and recognize perhaps our vulnerability, you know, when the scaffolding that we've built isn't quite holding us up, there can be a feeling of vulnerability. And we're allowing the parts of our humanity and parts of this life that can't be solved or resolved to be here, can't be figured out or concluded. And we can begin to relax into that a little bit, you know, letting go of some of that sense of certainty, recognizing that while it can be difficult, there can also be a moment of intimacy with the way things truly are. And then there can be a beginning of freedom. And so speaking to, you know, this need for maybe certainty and also navigating the realm of not knowing. So some things are objectively true in this life. We can certainly count on certain things being certain, at least for a period of time. So here's an example, something objectively true. So Usain Bolt is a great runner, and this is certain. It is measurable. We can measure how good he is, how quickly he runs, and he has a phenomenal record. So this is certain. He's now ranked as the world's greatest runner. And yet, if history is any indicator, his record will fall at some point. And at some point that will change, even though over time in history, there has been the idea that certain athletic achievements will never be beat, that it is physically impossible. And those were certainties at different times, physically impossible. This record will hold forever, and somebody comes along and beats it. And so that certainty falls apart. And that is just the reality of impermanence and change. And that it just over time, we look at what we might think of as uncertain in one moment, and then we find it changes. And so a lot of Dharma practice is really working with this endless change, you know, that Buddha talks about, and finding that wherever this ground is needs to include that which is not even in the state of ground. There's something greater, the unconditioned, the unborn mind, Buddha mind, this moment when we can let go into and find spaciousness and freedom when even in the place of not knowing. And so there's been, you know, those of you who maybe had plans around the holidays, it's not really that far away. We're only into February. And yet during the holidays, there was so much uncertainty. Some of you know it was, at first everything seemed like it was going along well. And then this Omicron variant started getting worse and so many plans got upended and often changed, or a lot of people got COVID. And I know for myself, I had planned to teach a New Year's retreat out in California in a place called Big Bear. And it's a very snowy, a mountainous area in the winter, but very beautiful. And so it was going to be it's a 5-night New Year's retreat. And there was a lot of demand for this retreat. And there were many, many people registering for the retreat, and the numbers kept going up. And then as we got closer and closer to the retreat, there was a real question about the virus and would it be safe? You know, there were all kinds of very solid COVID protocols put into place, including a PCR test, not a home test, but a PCR test a couple days in advance. And we were going to mask to start off the retreat. There were just all kinds of really solid measures, but people started getting nervous, of course. And so there was an offer that last week of the retreat to give anyone a refund, a full refund, who didn't want to come because of COVID. And so there's some questions about certainty. You know, other of these in-person New Year's retreats were being canceled. I know Spirit Rock canceled its retreat, and down south we have Southern Dharma. You know, there were all these cancellations. And so for me, I was already out in California, and there got to be a great deal of uncertainty around whether this was going to even happen. And so what happened is a lot of people canceled, and yet just before the retreat started, there were still about 35 people registered for this retreat. And during this week, you know, I started feeling very confused, because it's like, am I going to go up the mountain? Am I going to teach this retreat? Am I not going to go? And then right before I was supposed to go, there was a snowstorm, and trying to get a ride up there became really challenging. So even when it started to appear that maybe the retreat would happen, there was a question about how to get up there safely. And so I was very confused, and I wasn't really sure where any of this was leading or heading or going. You know, I had all my materials and I was all ready to go. And I started being very confused and trying to figure it out. And I found that I was not having any success figuring it out, that I was getting kind of reactive to the situation. And this little voice popped in, it very counterintuitive. It says, trust confusion. And I thought, trust confusion? That doesn't make any sense. You know, I'm trying to get to, interestingly, I was trying to get to the peacefulness of not knowing. So confusion would be maybe a step before kind of the letting go into not knowing. And I wanted to get to the other place. I wanted to either get to knowing of what is going to happen and whether I could get up the mountain, or I wanted to get to the point of peacefulness, of letting go into just not knowing. But the voice said, trust confusion. And so I started listening to that, and I started going into the realm of confusion. You know, this is what confusion looks like. The mind isn't clear. The mind doesn't know. Not sure how to proceed, not sure where to go or how to hold back. And so in the realm of confusion, there was a kind of letting go into the terrain of the moment. And it was like the muddiness of water that's all stirred up. And yet the awareness, you could say, the awareness of the mind, of the mindfulness practice, was to allow the mind, you could say, like a stone, to just sink into the confusion, just dropping down into the muddy waters. And as the stone began to drop, the stone of awareness, in a sense, began to drop into the body, into the swirling of not knowing, something began to settle. The water began to settle. And the stone just kind of sank, like sinking to the bottom of a lake. And then when it settled, it was clear. And so, in a sense, trusting confusion was about letting go of what I couldn't control, and letting go of trying to understand what I couldn't understand in that moment. And then there was a kind of peacefulness. Even though there was a groundlessness of not knowing, there was a peacefulness of the mind in that moment, of understanding there's not a lot of understanding just yet. The information isn't clear. And so then I could just be with that. And then what happened was my husband was looking at a map that morning and he said, oh, he was looking at the weather. And he said, oh, look, there's a 3-hour window. I think I could get you up the mountain and drive back down in 3 hours and miss the snowstorm and I won't get snowed on. It's like, okay, let's go. And so we packed all of our things. I threw everything in a bag and we rushed up the mountain and made it up there. The snow got delayed a little bit. And then he was able to get back down the mountain. It was exhausting for him, but we were able to do it. And because I had kind of relaxed into a more peaceful place with not knowing, I was able to be really responsive to the situation, to say, this is the time. This is when we're going to go. And so out of that became a responsiveness, out of the groundlessness, and was able to move forward with it. And the retreat was beautiful, by the way. We had we were able to stay well, you know, through the PCR testing. We masked for the first couple of days, and it turned out beautifully, and everybody was well. And so speaking of this not knowing, sometimes not knowing is too hard to sit with, or it seems that way, because there's no ground. You know, we can't always access our immediate experience when the nervous system is wound up, when it's uncomfortable, when there's a lot of fear. But there can be a skillful approach to this too. And sometimes I like to offer a reminder in Buddhism that we have three ways to meet our experience. And the first one is Buddha prescribed, is the most skillful way to meet our experience is with wisdom. And wisdom really means seeing things the way they are, like the suchness. Again, when we can meet our experience, we can meet the experience of this moment as it is without adding our reactivity, without adding our projections. When we can really see it with wisdom, then we can respond from a very clear mind and heart. But we can't always do that. And so then the next step is, if we can't meet our experience with wisdom, can we meet it with compassion? So when we're in pain, when it's difficult, when everything is unclear, sometimes we can't just see it as it is. And so we bring in a compassionate heart and recognize that this is a painful moment. This is a difficult moment. This is a moment of not knowing. And to be kind to ourselves in our difficulty. And so we meet the moment, we meet the experience with compassion. But as some of you know who've been practicing, sometimes it's even hard to meet the moment with compassion. It's too much. We're overwhelmed. And so that is when we distract ourselves. So sometimes meeting the moment is too much, and we have to use skillful means of turning away, recognizing that we can come back later. And this can especially be true in trauma. And overwhelm, sometimes we just have to move away and step back and create space and come back to it later. And so the skillful mean includes sometimes stepping away. I think sometimes we think it should always be just going right in, but sometimes the most kind and compassionate thing we can do is step back and come back again when we're ready. And then we can begin to explore this terrain of groundlessness. And, you know, there's a famous quote that I just want to read. And some of you are familiar with it probably. The bad news is you're falling from a plane with no parachute. The good news is there is no ground. And so I was talking to somebody about this who used to be a pilot and who was dealing with a situation of a great deal of stress and was having a hard time getting any ground under his feet, you know, any sense of orientation at all. And when I said this, because he was a pilot, he suddenly relaxed and he said, "Ah, no ground." It was like, oh yes, you know, I can kind of float free. There's nothing to hit that is going to hurt me. Just realizing, oh, there's this space, this boundless space that can hold me in this moment. And there can be a moment of transition. And some years back, I was going through a really difficult time in my life. And it's like my old life was falling away, my work, my relationships, it's like everything was just falling apart and I didn't know the way forward or even where my life was going. And I was talking to a psychologist about it and I was really looking for some kind of answer that would just get me to the other side, you know, get me to the solution. And instead he said, "Ah, what you're doing now is you're learning to walk where there is no ground." And it really struck me. I kept looking for ground, you know, the ground of the past that was no longer there, the ground of the future that had yet to arrive. And yet in this moment, what I had, what I understood was learning to walk where there is no ground. It started to give me a sense of freedom. It helped orient me in a very difficult time. And while it wasn't easy, it helped me to come back and recognize that there was something in this moment that I could connect with. You know, and it wasn't as concrete as I would have liked it to be, but it did give me a sense of spaciousness and freedom that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And so I want to also share about this need for certainty and how it can be tragic at times when certainty isn't always the answer, when being with the groundlessness sometimes feels like too much. And in this case, I want to talk about something that, you know, this need for knowing and this need for certainty, which when it's inconvenient, can be individual and collective, and even our institutions sometimes function this way to the point of tragedy. And I want to share what I think is a very tragic thing that happened because of a intense need for certainty. And some of you probably have read recently this story, and it's about a very famous writer named Alice Sebold, who has written two best-selling books. One is called Lucky, and it was about her encounter, her experience of being raped when she was 19 years old. And then she wrote a book later called The Lovely Bones, which was made into a blockbuster movie. And so when Alice Sebold was 19 and she was in college, she was brutally raped. And of course, it was a horrific and traumatizing experience. And I can relate because I too was raped around that time in my life. And so I got her book and I read her book. And so I related to it. But what happened was that there was somebody who was caught and who was assumed to be the rapist. And it happened very quickly where he was charged and incarcerated. And he was incarcerated for 16 years. And he had a chance get out on parole early if he admitted his remorse and his guilt. But he wouldn't do it. He never admitted his guilt because he wasn't guilty. He couldn't do it. And so he stayed in jail for 16 years. And so when he was released, he had a record. He was a sexual offender, and that record was available to anybody who hired him, to the neighborhoods he went into. And so he was marginalized, and he could only have low-paying jobs. He couldn't really get any responsible work because this record followed him. When he got married, he told his wife he wouldn't have children because he didn't want his children to deal with the fact that their father had a criminal record. And so what happened, so that he's in his early 60s now, and what happened was there was a man, a producer, who was going to make Alice Sebold's first book, Lucky, into a movie. And so the producer, interestingly, he had a prior criminal record. He was gotten out of it. He was no longer living that kind of life, but he probably had a better understanding of the criminal justice system than most people. And as he looked into the story and he looked into the case, the criminal case, he said, he immediately saw that there were so many holes in this case. And he couldn't go forward. And to his credit, he could not let his desire to make the movie that he had funding for, he couldn't let it interfere with his quest for the truth and for justice. He saw something that was wrong, and he took action. And he did something about it. And he took it back to the criminal justice system. He showed attorneys. He said, this man was falsely accused. And it was so quick. Once they looked into it, it was the case was full of holes. And he was exonerated just within almost no time. And the need for certainty, the need to close this case, led them to incarcerate a man who is completely innocent. And the tragedy of that, yes, there were two tragedies. Alice Siebold was raped and she was traumatized. But then the person who was put into prison was not the person. And yet there was this push for certainty, this push for justice. And it was absolutely, to me, when I read the story, so incredibly heartbreaking. And yet I was so grateful that this person, this producer, was able to let go of his ambition. And of course the whole thing fell apart, but he was able to allow a man to be exonerated very late in life. But at least what he's got left of his life, at least he doesn't have that hanging over his shoulders. And so the question here then is, when we're dealing with uncertainty, when it feels inconvenient, and when it leads to suffering, what are the qualities that can help begin to help us address that? Investigation, compassion, patience. And so investigation and compassion are key cores in Buddhism. Investigation is one of the seven factors of enlightenment. And so in this case, investigation is looking into, is it true? When we hold to certainty, question, is it true? And so he began to investigate, is this person really the criminal? Is he the one? No, he's not. And unfortunately and heartbreakingly, there are all too many, and his name was Anthony Broadwater, there are all too many Anthony Broadwaters in our prison system. And investigation and compassion. So compassion, in this case, this is the Brahma Viharas. So the producer was compassionate enough, maybe because of his own experiences, was compassionate enough to break this apart. And he had to walk away, but he was able to get somebody off. And so that was a powerful thing. And again, not to take away from the suffering all around in this situation. And there's been an effort now for some restorative justice for him. And I hope that he's able to have some peace in this latter part of his life. And so we're in the Dharma. We're taught that craving leads to attachment and suffering. And if our craving and attachment are too strong, we will be less likely to investigate when something is not really certain, and it may lead to a different outcome. And so this is the inner and outer reflection, inner and outer. And so this is how it is true, both inside and outside. And so this investigation, this clarity, not to just assume that something is true, but to investigate and to find compassion and then find some space. And so I just wanted to offer one other story into this talk. And so some years ago, and some of you will relate to this, I know, some years ago, my husband was diagnosed. This was shortly after we were married. So he was a young man, but he was diagnosed with testicular cancer. And it was right about the time that Lance Armstrong's book came out, you know, and he had testicular cancer. And so, you know, we got the book, we're trying to educate ourselves. But one of the difficult parts of having a diagnosis of this kind is once the biopsy is done, there can't be any certainty around whether the cancer has metastasized until the actual surgery happens. And so there was a gap from the diagnosis to the surgery of a number of weeks. And so there was this profound not knowing, you know, has the cancer metastasized? Will it be, will he be okay? And I noticed that I was really getting just totally freaked out about this not knowing. And that, you know, at night I couldn't sleep. You know, I was just, my mind was going everywhere. It was just projecting, you know, catastrophizing, worrying about the worst case scenario. So often when there's a lack of information, a lack of ground, the mind spins. It seeks something. It seeks ground, even in catastrophe. And it's really interesting to think that sometimes when we catastrophize, it almost feels like something to hold on to is easier than to let go into the open ground of complete not knowing. And so as I saw that, I saw what I was doing, and I thought, I can't spend the next 2 or 3 weeks in this state of mind. What can I do? And so simple, really dedicate this time, these next 2 weeks, to living completely in the present moment, completely in the ground of not knowing. But also this ground of not knowing is the present moment, where my breath is, where my body is, where my husband is. So I could be very intimate with myself. I could be intimate with him. And I could live in this moment of not knowing, because truly I didn't know. And so the initial point of this not knowing was letting go of that sense of ground, but there was no ground to begin with. And it was also that teaching of Dogen, not knowing is most intimate. And so in that moment, I was able to touch into the intimacy of this experience of not knowing and of presence and of connecting with my heart, my love for my husband and my caring for my husband, and to connect with him in that way. And yet I was so much calmer. I was able to navigate those 2 weeks recognizing, as Ajahn Chah always says, it's uncertain, isn't it? Life is uncertain. And I could live with that. And I could find a kind of peace, a measure of peace in that not knowing. And thankfully, when he did, when he did get into the surgery, thankfully it had not spread, and he was able to be treated, and it didn't return. And so there was a coming back of peace and of health for him, you know, which could have gone another way. But I'm grateful for those moments where I could really be intimate with myself and with him in a moment of deep not knowing, and to be able to navigate that. And so just one other short story, and then I'll offer some opening for questions and comments. And so one thing that happened at the retreat was there was a woman at the retreat who was dealing with some grief and had been through a loss and was searching for some evidence, some sign that the person who had lost was still around. You know, are you still there? Just needing some sense of connection. Is there a sign that can come to me? And the suffering was that there hadn't been a sign. And yet what happened over the course of the retreat was that she began to relax into her heart. And as she relaxed into her heart, she realized, oh, I know what I can do. And she put a picture of her husband on the screen of her phone. And so every time she opened her phone, her loved one was right there in her heart, in her being, right there. It didn't need to be a message from beyond. It could be just in this moment, in this heart, here it is. And so she was able to be freed from the need for something out there, something right here. And so starting with this practice of grounding and finding ground, one of the easiest ways in the guided meditation I offered was finding the grounding in your body. The practice we did at the beginning was a spacious grounding and breathing and touching into the heart, into the body, and then finding space in the body. And so quite often, starting with the body, you know, when Buddha offered the four foundations of mindfulness, he taught that of all the four, the body is the most stable. It changes the least of the four foundations. The others being, you know, breath and body being the first foundation, the next being feeling tones, the next being the mind, and the next being the dharmas, everything, the thoughts. But the body is the most stable. Although the body changes over time, it is the least changing. It is the easiest to find a ground of stability. And once we find that ground of stability, we can expand outward, and then we can feel that sense of interconnection. And then we can open to a spaciousness that holds us even when we're in a space where there isn't ground underneath. And so we can begin with what we have right here, and then we can open and we can find some spaciousness with patience and love and compassion. And so I'll close my talk there. And just before we go into the questions, I do want to say that just as a reminder about the Dana is the offering. Sangha Live does not charge for this time. And also my offering, as well as the Sangha Live offering, is completely based on the generosity of those of you who are with us today. So if you would like to support Sangha Live and my teaching, then we'd very much appreciate your generosity and your don't knowing and your, I mean, and your generosity and the offer that you make for us. And so I want to offer and open it up for questions. And there's a question button. I know there's a lot of commentary over in the chat session, and that's great. I'll find it more easily through the question over here if you want to pose a question, or if you would like to come on and pose a question to me on camera where we can talk back and forth. That can be also a very a way to interact. So I just want to open it up and hear from you either through the chat, through the question and Q&A. And also if you'd like to talk to me in person. And I'll start with the question that was already here from Tay. I would appreciate your thoughts on dealing with long-term hostility from others in my life who are not getting their needs met from me. These people display unreasonable and disrespectful behavior. I've tried putting boundaries in place. Unfortunately, I can't leave the situation due to responsibilities I have. I have sent metta to them. However, the situation is still not resolved and it is stressful. First, Tay, I just want to say that I just offer my compassion, and I'm sorry that you're in a situation like this. So that it sounds really difficult. And without us talking, you know, again, there can be a lot of nuance and context to situations like this, and I may not be able to answer it as skillfully as I would like if we were talking directly, but I'll just try to say that it sounds like you've really done a lot of the right things from what you describe, you know, that you've tried to offer metta and you've tried to be as kind as you can, and still you're dealing with an unresolved and stressful situation. And it may be that, again, not knowing the exact situation, is that, you know, it may be that it isn't going to be resolved. It may be that this is kind of an open-ended situation, based on how you're describing it. And my question would be, you know, how much kindness can you give to yourself to create a space where you can feel okay within yourself? And I hope, you know, I know a lot of times these situations that are difficult, sometimes we add a second arrow. And I don't know if you're doing this. The second arrow being that there's the difficult, painful situation. And then there can often be a mental, kind of self-criticism. You know, why can't I do this differently? Why can't I, fix it right now? You know, why can't I use my practice to make it better? And we can start to get into almost a self-criticism. And I don't know, again, since we're not talking, I don't know what you're experiencing, but finding a space within your own heart, you know, for some peace within your own being and offering some kindness to the hard places, all of the hard places, all of the unresolved places, even the confusion, offering some space for yourself and recognizing that no matter, it sounds like you've taken steps to fix it and to solve it. And, you know, hats off to you for everything that you've done. And I know it's hard sometimes to offer metta to difficult people. I really do. Start with you and really offer as much love and compassion to yourself as you can give, and then move it outward a little bit and, you know, to the extent you can. And just keep doing the best you can in your own heart and give yourself some space. I know how hard it is when a situation is not able to be resolved. So that's the best I can offer for now. But, yeah. So another question we have here, I'm not sure how to tell the difference between being with the not knowing, allowing time and space for some clarity to emerge, a kind of switching off, disassociating from the discomfort of this groundlessness. Okay, that's a good question. And it's kind of like there can be sometimes a feeling of I can't resolve this right now, and let me just push it aside. Since I can't solve it, I'm going to disassociate, which is different. It is different. You're right. It is. It's sort of like saying I can't deal with this, so I'm just going to walk away. And sometimes you have to do that. You know, sometimes we do have to switch off. But then there's other times where, you know, that is the space of, in other words, coming back and saying, this is too much. Kind of like when I was saying, this is confusing. I can't solve this right now, but I don't know what is the next step. And so it's almost like going into the muddiness and the murkiness of not knowing was actually a little bit easier for me than trying to go to the groundlessness itself. It's like, I know uncertainty. I know the murkiness of the realm of uncertainty. So I'm just going to be there. And let me see if I can go from there. And let me see then if it can open up. And the space began to open up just in that moment. Because truth is, sometimes we don't have a whole lot of time to really allow a solution. Like when I had to go up the mountain to go to the retreat, I didn't have a whole lot of time. I couldn't just push it. You know, I had to allow some uncertainty right there. And then it opened up. And so it's sometimes a matter of discernment, you know, looking for situations where am I just pushing it aside because I don't want to resolve it? Or is this really uncomfortable? And then can we be kind to ourselves? Can we offer compassion to the hard places and then come back again with a little bit more space, a little bit more compassion, a little more patience to move into that open space of not knowing and groundlessness? And I think it's really important to sometimes be patient and to allow ourselves to do that and to recognize that sometimes we need to disassociate because it's too much. Okay. And this is maybe a comment, more of a comment from Marita. It took me years to realize that an unresolved childhood trauma was disturbing the practice. I preferred working in the retreat so that I could go in and out. Sometimes I felt criticized for not sitting more, but actually I was following my instinct. That is a really great point and a really important element of practice is that sometimes trauma is such that we can't work in the ground of not knowing and that we need to, in fact, find that space. And often what I do in retreats when I find that a person is starting to hit a point of challenge is to say, take your time away from walking, take your time away from sitting, just go enjoy nature, just take your time and relax and then come back to this moment. See then if there's space, see if you can sit with it at that point. And, you know, a lot of times that begins to open the space. Sometimes we can't do it all at once. And so that terrain has to be navigated very, very carefully and very cautiously and with a lot of compassion and with a lot of space, often, very often. So we've got some space for questions. And if anybody would like to ask a question or come in for open meeting, we can do that. Yeah, and I do want to speak. I mean, they're in the chat, you know, somebody did speak a bit about the whole challenge of the judicial system and rape. And it really is, there are the side of the story. Of course, so many women are just not listened to and not heard. And that's unfortunately another side of this. There are so many people, especially people of color, who are falsely incarcerated. And it's a horrible problem in our judicial system. And there are many women who are not heard when they are raped. And so we have this whole, you know, element of navigating. And so I'm just putting voice to that now. I want to put voice to that because I feel it needs to be said, that too is a part of the tragedy of what we deal with in these systems that we have. And I too went through that. And just to put voice to that for some of you who had to deal with that, to that side of the equation, which is also a very painful and difficult. So I'll leave it open for a couple more minutes if anybody has any further questions. We can always close with a guided compassion practice, but I'll leave it open just for a minute or two to see if any other questions come through. But I'm happy to close out with a guided loving kindness. Thank you for Yang Shan. Yes. Thank you for your thoughts there. I appreciate that. Yes. I know sometimes people just need to absorb these talks, and I appreciate your putting voice to that. We do have one person, Jane C, that wants to go on the mic. So, Jane, I think you should be coming through. Okay, Jane said she couldn't get on the mic. I'm sorry, Jane. Thank you for sharing that. So, okay, I'm not sure, Jane, are you, I mean, not sure if we should move on to the guided meditation or try again. I'm happy to speak to you if it can open up. Okay, is the question in the chat? Oh, yeah, you're just, I see what you're saying, that you, yeah, just relating to the topic in the other box because of stress. Yes. Again, I'm sorry to hear that you're in such a strong place of not knowing right now. And, it's really difficult, especially when there's that uncertainty that's just arising and the stress can be so difficult to work through. And I really believe sometimes just walking and stepping into not knowing in these moments are sometimes we can't. And sometimes it's almost more stressful to try in a moment like that. And to only just bring as much kindness to as you possibly can, and whatever ways that can help create some support, with just touching into the heart in whatever moments that you can touch. But sometimes it takes some time and patience and a lot of compassion, and whatever ways you can find some relief, no matter what it might be. Because like I said, it's not always possible to just jump into the not knowing. And so just my heart, just wanting to offer my heart to you. And let's just take a couple of minutes then to just close out with a couple of minutes of compassion. Let's do some self-compassion to close. If you want to just, any of you who are really feeling some emotion right now, or any stress, if you'd like to, you know, put your hand to your heart, if that would give you a little sense of peace. And just allowing yourself to truly feel whatever is in your heart in this moment, and taking a few breaths and connecting with the body. And just allowing whatever is here to be as present as it can. Again, bringing yourself a lot of space around this, of just touching this moment as gently as you can, touching your heart. And touching the breath. Allow the breath to touch the heart. And just being aware of whatever measure of suffering or difficulty you may be facing right now. And offering as much love and as much kindness as you can. And we'll offer a few words. May I be held in compassion. May I be filled with loving kindness. May this suffering be a kind, wise, and patient teacher. May I be at peace. May I see myself just as I am. May I be kind to myself. No part left out. And now speaking directly to perhaps any part of you that really needs to be seen and known and acknowledged right now. Even if it's in the shadows, I see you. I care about you. May you find peace and equanimity. May your deepest suffering be seen and known and held tenderly and with love. May the great space of awareness and of the Buddha Dharma hold you in this moment. May you know that you are loved. May you know that you are seen. And opening this outward, I'd like to just offer for those of you here today all of the kindness and compassion. We've touched on some difficult topics, and I know many people are suffering. And I just want to, for a moment, perhaps we could all just imagine and see each other in deep compassion and kindness that has been expressed by so many of you here in the chat, that we're all holding each other. And we're all here. And we're all standing together, even if the space has no ground. We're here together in this loving space, in this compassionate space. And may we all find peace. And may we all know that we're loved. May we all know that we're cared for with love and compassion. Well, thank you all so much for your participation and presence today. And thank you all. It was great to be here with you. And I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day or evening. And I hope that we will connect again in one way or another. You can always go to my website if you would like to know more about me. It's lisaernst.com. And I have various offerings and teachings. And you're always welcome to join me. And I know you will enjoy many more sessions with Sangha Live also. So thank you so much.